acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yanhu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 143, Catching the Thread. Sunday, November 13th, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yanhu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. You can find links, photographs, and show notes for each episode on my website, yarnsatyanhu.com. I'd like to welcome new listener Jen from Bay Village, Ohio. Jen is Jen Knitting Around on Ravelry, and she has recently introduced herself on the Yarns at Yanhu group on Ravelry. Thanks, Jen, and welcome. This episode features the following segments: On the Porch, Ever Expanding Skill Set, Off the Shelf, Gratitude Journal, and so forth. On the Porch. There has been a lot of knitting going on at Yanhu over the past few days. I don't know that it's really helped ease the anxiety that I felt since the election, but it has kept me busy. So I'll tell you about the projects I've been working on. I've completed the knitting of my Sheep to Shawl class project, which is a poncho with a cowled neckline. I've used colors in an alternating fashion so that one color sort of eases or transitions into another. I am still considering dipping the whole thing into a walnut dye bath, but I haven't done that yet. And I'm pretty pleased with the shape and construction of this poncho. It begins with a very soft and loosely knit ribbed cowl for the neckline. And then I shifted from a singles yarn to a two-ply yarn, and from size 8 needles to size 6 needles to begin the body of the poncho. It's mostly in stockinette, and it has 2 1-by-1 rib panels, one down each side of the poncho. The colors gradually transition one into another, and then the last color is the very darkest brown from the Jacob. And I use that for a ribbing, and I use a tubular bind off for the edge. It's a little long, and I find myself, just as you would push up your sleeves, I find myself wanting to push up the edges of the poncho to just get a little more maneuverability. I tried this on in front of my Sheep to Shawl classmates, and Kathy suggested that I might try running some kind of a cord, I guess, down the side panels so that I could create a sort of a ruching or scrunch it up a little bit, almost like you might do with window blinds. And then that would pull up the sides without really altering the overall shape of the poncho. And it would allow me adjustability so that if I did want that coverage, I could just let it down. I haven't tried it yet, but I think that's a really good idea. I have been considering just ripping out the bottom and re-knitting it again. But I put some short row shaping along the front and the back so that it dips down for a little bit more coverage. And I really like that short row shaping. It's more pronounced in the back than in the front. And I did a little bit of short row shaping on the back neck also, so that the back comes up a little bit higher than the front of the poncho, and that allows the cowl to drape down in the front. So overall, I'm pleased with my progress. I would not call this project done, because if that idea for scrunching or ruching up the sides doesn't work, I think I will be taking out the bottom portion and re-knitting it. I've also been making progress on the Tungata cowl, a gift for Samuel for Christmas. This cowl has a lot of different features. It has corrugated ribbing on each side of a stranded knitting pattern with three different colors. And then the cowl is double thick. So on the other side is just stripes knit in the round. And then that fabric is folded over and seamed together. And the cowl hangs down in one long loop. But I think the way Samuel will wear it is doubled over. And you really see all of that different texture and patterning and coloration when you fold that cowl double. I have completed one side of the corrugated rib and all of the stranded color work, and I'm now working on the other side of corrugated rib. And I think once that's complete, this project will really be zipping along, because just knitting stripes in the round is much easier than the knitting in the first part of the project. I have found it helpful to look at other knitter suggestions on Ravelry, and I have ripped out this entire cowl and restarted it based on some of those suggestions. One is to use a provisional cast on, which allows a lot more stretch, and I think that enables the pattern and the corrugated rib to really show. And also, it will be so much easier to seam this together with the provisional cast on. So I'm really pleased that I ripped out and started over. I like the look of the stranded color work. I only completed three repeats rather than five, because the cowl was getting pretty tall, and I think that might have been too bulky and uncomfortable. So I think three repeats of that stranded color work is excellent. I do wish that I had a third contrast color that was a little more contrasting in quality. The sample pattern has a gray and a black, or a very deep gray and then a golden color, and Samuel chose a spice brown. So there's really not a lot of tonal difference between the black and the brown. I think you can notice it close up, but from a distance, the stranded color work isn't as striking. So we'll see how it looks. I think he'll be pleased with the colors, even though he doesn't remember that I'm making this for him, because he brought up the idea of a bandana type cowl, and we even looked at patterns together, and he seemed to have no recollection that we had bought this yarn and that I was doing the knitting. So I think he really will be surprised by this gift, which I'm happy about. The third thing I've been working on is my processing of Eloise. Eloise, the Shetland sheep's fleece. It is so enjoyable to work with this Shetland fleece. This is my first time working with Shetland. I've spun some Shetland that was combed top, but it was uniform in color. The fiber prep was just meticulous, and I think it really prevented me from engaging with all the variations that a Shetland sheep has to offer. So last weekend, it was unbelievably sunny and warm, and I washed all of the fleece that I had previously opened the tips and separated into five different lock structure and color types. And my plan is to spin these five different variations of locks separately so that I can see what the lock formation, color, structure, texture really contributes to in terms of the finished yarn. And I plan to make my yarn for each of these in the exact same way so that the only difference will really be what the different type of fiber does to the final yarn product. So here's my plan for the 10.9 ounces of Eloise's fleece. I have completed my sample spin. I talked in a previous episode about setting aside all of the locks that were not specific in structure, the part of the fleece that had the most vegetable matter and was sort of disorganized. And I washed that and carded it, made it into rolags, and spun that. And it just spun up absolutely beautiful. I think I spun it a little bit thicker than I ultimately want this yarn to be. So that was a good thing to learn with this sample. I have been spinning on a Scottish spindle. It's called a Jallagan, and that was the purchase I made at Rhinebeck. I bought it from Snyder's Spindles. He was vending at Susan's Fiber Shop, and this was a spindle I had seen because Joanna Spring showed me her purchases, and I just thought, that is perfect. Spinning Shetland fleece on a Scottish spindle is just the best idea ever. So I am carding the locks, as I mentioned, keeping each of these five different types of locks separate. I'm making them into rolags, and this fleece is just carding up beautifully. It's so soft. It's very lofty, and I think it's perfectly clean because a lot of the vegetable matter is falling out as I card, which means there's not enough lanolin to keep that sticking in the fiber as I card it. And yet I still feel, you know, some nice amount of lanolin in it as I spin. It doesn't feel dry. It doesn't feel crisp. And there's just a beautiful sheen to the finished yarn. I'm spinning on that Jallagan, and then I am plying using my wheel. A little bit about this Scottish spindle. Jallagan is spelled D-E-A-L-G-A-N, and I will provide some links. Of course, Michael Snyder of Snyder Spindles was demonstrating the spindle. So I got to try it and I got some tips from him before I even made my purchase. But once I got home, I wanted to find out a little bit more about the spindle and the origins. It's really unusual in shape. It's a maple conical shaped spindle that is about the diameter of a quarter, maybe a little bit larger, at its base, and then just is slowly tapered up to a little bit of a notched tip. It's very, very sturdy and strong, and this is a whorl-less spindle. So it functions quite a bit like a bottom whorl because the weight is much more predominant at the bottom of the spindle than the top, but there's nothing sticking out. There's no whorl, there's nothing decorative. There is a cross-shaped notch in the bottom of the spindle, and this item functions both as a spindle and as a nostipin. So I'm able to create a center pole ball, which is one of my favorite things about using all the Turkish spindles that I love so much. So this is just a new tool, a very sturdy tool. Great for travel, great for using around pets or children or in public situations where you don't want something more delicate, but it makes a really beautiful yarn. And I think Scottish tradition of it along with the Shetland fleece is just really perfect. So my plan is to proceed carding each of these fiber types, spinning the singles on the Jalagan, plying on the wheel. I'm aiming for a sport weight yarn because I plan to leave one of these skeins of fiber undyed in its natural color and then dye four others and use that yarn for a color work yoke. And I want to knit that Bressé dress again. It's just such a great canvas for color work, and I think it would be just so beautiful to have some of my hand-spun, hand-dyed yarn in a color work yoke. So taking those numbers from the Bressé dress, what I hope to do is to put a different pattern. I'd really like to do that Kelly Muffs pattern for the yoke of the dress and then carry out some of the alterations to that Bressé dress that I had talked about, not making the last set of increases at the end of the yoke and maybe doing the waist shaping a little bit differently so that the dress is a little more fitted, maybe doing some patterning at the hemline of the dress, and then keeping some of the other changes and alterations that I had made to my original. I think it would be great to purchase some commercially spun Shetland yarn in some sort of a very neutral base color, like some sort of gray or brown, and then that would really allow my naturally dyed yarn to shine. This project will take quite a while, and my target date is for Rhinebeck 2017. I think it would be great to wear a dress that had its origins in the festival the year prior and to really make this, you know, a Shackleton project, a long journey that I take small steps toward over the course of the year, and of course tell listeners all about it. So I've included a photograph of my Jalagan and my spinning, and I'll also include some links to a woman who does some excellent demonstrations. She does them in Scottish costume online, and I really learned a lot from her and some additional tips and tricks for using this type of spindle. Ever-expanding skill set. Even though we've moved into October and hashtag Power Pantry ingredient for October is squash, I have still been cooking with apples. My mom gave me a wide variety of apples. She had some extras on hand, so I've continued to experiment with them. And I've made two excellent recipes that were suggested by Selkit on the Yarns at Yinhu Ravelry group, and I neglected to take photographs of either of these recipes after I made them. But I want to tell you about them now. The first is a variation on a soup. The original is something made with green mangoes, and this recipe features green apples in place of green mango. I did a variation on the recipe that was posted and used some chicken stock, coconut milk. I didn't have all the spices called for, so I used a variety of warming Indian spices, and then the recipe suggests dal to thicken the soup. I used some overcooked rice, and it was really creamy and delicious, but with a sort of a sharpness, a little bit of tartness underneath, and that was balanced out by the richness of the coconut milk and then the rice as the thickener. So that was a really great experiment, and I think I would continue to work on variations of this, trying to maybe make it a little more thick and hearty, or maybe trying to use it as a sauce for some type of dish where I would normally use a curry sauce. I think that could be very interesting. The other was the cinnamon apple cake that Selkit suggested, and this was very well received yesterday by my Sheep to Shawl classmates. This is a nice recipe that you can make in a springform pan. And I love when a recipe calls for a springform pan because I think the presentation is so nice and it makes so many slices. It's really easy to serve and kind of has a nice presentation to it. I used one more egg than was called for and a little bit more flour and apple also, just to bulk up the quantity a little bit. This cake has a delicious cinnamon flavor to it, and then it has chunked apple, which is still present, but because of the long baking time for this cake, a lot of that apple just kind of cooks down into the cake, and then some of the firmer varieties of apple were still present in little chunks. The recipe also has cream cheese, which I think lends a different kind of richness to the dish. So that's an excellent recipe, and I will definitely be using that again. It's great to feed a crowd. I started my month of cooking with squash on Halloween and made a soup I love to make on Halloween, which is a butternut squash soup with coconut milk. And then it has a frozen grated Mounds bar or Almond Joy bar as a garnish on the top. I just think this is a delicious combination, a little bit fun and unusual, really festive. And I got the recipe from, it's called Sometimes You Feel Like a Nut, Sometimes You Don't. And I forgot that the original recipe calls for sweet potato, not butternut squash. But I've been making it for years with butternut squash. So one of the reasons that I was neglecting to take some photos is that I got distracted. I posted a photograph of this soup with the Mounds bar garnish on Instagram, and it got a "you win" comment from one of my absolute hands-down favorite podcasters, Evan Kleiman of Good Food on KCRW. And I was so busy, you know, dancing around the kitchen and celebrating this recognition of my soup and my post that I totally forgot I had another soup going and some other things I wanted to take photographs of. So that was a really nice milestone and a compliment to my efforts for hashtag Power Pantry. And I really love the feedback and the community that's forming around this idea of exploring and sharing recipes, cooking with what's on hand, making variations to recipes based on what's available and local, seasonal. It's just so much fun and such an excellent learning experience. So I'm looking forward to more cooking with squash. I have a delicata squash. I have another butternut squash. I have been purchasing some organic pure pack pumpkin in a kind of a box, which I've never purchase pumpkin that way. I always buy it in a can, but this has a really excellent flavor to it. And I made a pumpkin mac and cheese, which came out creamy and absolutely delicious. My hope is to arrive at some decision about a few squash recipes that will grace my Thanksgiving table later in the month. Off the shelf. I have been savoring A Shepherd's Life by James Rebanks. I first heard of him via his Instagram feed, Herdy Shepherd, which features very beautiful pastoral photographs of sheep herding in England with a practice that may be unfamiliar to some people where sheep are hefted. They graze on common land, and then only in the valleys do people own the land that is their farms. There's this common area for grazing, and so periodically during the year, sheep are brought down to the farms and then returned to pasture. James Rebanks has been writing about this shepherd's life near the Lake District in England, and he has been touring in the U.S. to promote a new book, which is a collection of photographs. The photographs on his Instagram feed rarely have captions, so I'm sure that looking at this book will be a way of learning more about some of those beautiful photographs. He appeared in New York City at Joe's Pub for a reading, and I think a lecture with photographs earlier in the month, and I really wanted to attend, but my schedule and it being on a school night, a weeknight, just didn't allow. So I was very, very pleased that he gave a generous and detailed interview on the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC. And it just so happened that I was driving between two school buildings during midday when he was on live on the air. So I got to hear a clip of this while I was driving from one school to the other. And then as soon as I got home, I went online to listen to the whole thing. It's an excellent interview. You learn a lot about the sheep herding life, the landscape, the connection between the farmer and the community and the land. And so I will link this interview on my website so you can have a listen. I've also been turning to poetry this week as a way to overcome some of the overwhelming anxiety that I've felt post-election. I went to bed on Tuesday evening around 10:30 in the wonderful undecided bliss. It's probably the happiest I've felt since. And I awoke at 4 a.m. to fireworks, which told me everything I needed to know about the election results. And since then, I felt very similar to what some others have reported, like a real unease, anxiety, panicky feelings, my heart pounding in my chest and throat. Some of my friends have reported feeling like physically sick and really overwhelmed with this decision and finding it challenging to cope. Some have suggested that the votes in favor of our president-elect are not necessarily to be interpreted as votes for bigotry, hatred, and intolerance, but rather a vote for change, a very desperate vote for change, however frightening that change may appear. I would like to believe that. I don't know if I can believe that. But if it is true, I feel very strongly that we need to be the change that we wish to see, because I have no expectation of that, the changes that I want to see coming from our president-elect. There's no time to be complacent, that's for sure. And I've been thinking about some of my favorite poets and poems and wondering if there is anything that would speak to this time, this moment. And I found something that I would like to share with you. And I really was touched that there is a brief reference to fabric and fiber in this poem by one of my favorite poets, Naomi Shihab Nye. The poem is titled Kindness. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go, so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows, and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to gaze at bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. Gratitude Journal. Since recording my last episode, the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry has surpassed 600 members, and downloads have exceeded 100,000, which are some real milestones for me and for my podcast. And I am so very grateful for all the support and for the community that's forming around this podcast. It helps me motivate myself to record even when that's a real effort. And it would be much easier to sort of turn in and keep to myself. As an introvert, that's my natural inclination. But with this podcast, I feel a real commitment to make my voice heard. And I want to thank all the listeners who have been supportive of that journey. I'm taking a lot of different journeys. And I think the election results have reinforced my commitment to those journeys, specifically the journey of handmade things and a value for what is handmade and well-made, an inclination to think very carefully about consumption. And on Thursday, I attended a lecture at FIT in New York. I was very pleased to meet up with Jenny to attend this lecture. She's a New Yorker, and it was great to spend the evening in New York. The lecture itself was a bit underwhelming. The thrust of it was a comparison between the slow food movement and the slow fashion movement. I think the moderator had very grandiose plans, but her questions did not lead the panelists to discuss specifics and people who were making these actions meaningful. It was more sort of a general discussion about these principles. Principles with which I agree, but I think that it's time to move beyond principles into action. And what people and products can I support? How can I be part of this movement as opposed to a kind of bystander just nodding that I think it's good and acceptable? So I think there's more work to be done in that area, and maybe the Fashion Institute will sponsor other similar panels in the future that delve a little more deeply into this topic. But one thing I was reminded of is this notion that every dollar you spend is a kind of a vote. And so putting your money toward things, companies, people, concepts you really believe in is more important now than ever. And that the journey of making things yourself and reducing consumption is a really powerful, important journey. One that I'm pleased to be traveling along, even though I feel like I'm very much at the beginning stages. But my commitment deepens with every passing day. I have this commitment to a mostly handmade wardrobe, and I've also been thinking about some handmade gifts for the holidays. It's too late for me to start new knitting projects now the knitted gifts I plan to give, they've been completed over the summer. But I have had a sewing project in mind, and I purchased a walking foot for my machine, but I had trouble installing it, so I visited my mom. And she helped me put this walking foot on my machine. It's much easier than I thought it would be. I just misunderstood a direction that I got at the sewing store. And a walking foot is just this excellent tool because it has feed dogs on the actual foot so that when you're moving through thick or heavy fabric, both the feed dogs on your machine and the feed dogs on this foot help to move the fabric through. It's very loud and noisy and clattery, but the stitches it makes are really solid and sure, and it just feels like you're making great construction when you're using this walking foot. So I can see it for all kinds of applications, but the one I've been working on is a dop kit. I found a tutorial for a dop kit, which is like a little toiletries bag, and you make it with a canvas or a heavy fabric on the outside and then a cotton laminate on the inside so that you can wipe it out, or if you spill shampoo in there or something, you can just wash out the inside of the bag. It has a 14-inch zipper, and the tutorial is pretty good, although watching the tutorial with my mom, as I always do, it should be a drinking game. She is so much fun to watch a sewing tutorial with because she talks back to the person doing the tutorial the whole time. It's hilarious. But it gave me the essentials for what I needed to know. There's no pattern. You just cut 15 by 20 inch pieces of fabric. You have a 14 inch zipper, and it takes you through the process of creating this kit. It's not reversible. So there are raw seams on the inside. There are directions for neatening them and straightening them out. And overall, I think it makes sewing this much easier than the typical kinds of project bags where it's completely reversible. You lose a lot in terms of size and functionality when you do that. So just clipping the inside seams or trying to keep them neat makes this a lot. It's a beginner project, I would say. But the one thing that the tutorial neglects to show you, which I know is essential when you're making any kind of a bag with a zip, is when you are sewing it closed, you better make sure that your zipper is open. Otherwise, you'll have a bag sewn completely shut and inside out, and you won't have any way of going in there unless you rip your seam open. And the tutorial completely misses that very crucial, in my opinion, crucial step. It shows her with the zip open as she's sewing it, but she never says anything about it. And if you don't know to pay attention to that, you probably won't open your zip. Well, my mom just gave her an earful. It was really funny. But I was able to complete an entire dop kit. I sewed the whole thing in front of my mom. She talked me through all the fors and againsts and gave me tips galore. And now I think that today I will complete 5 more of these little toiletries bags. They're not that little, actually. With a 14-inch zip, they're pretty nice size. Great for a weekend travel. You could also use them as a project bag. Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And she recommended doing them production line style. So to do one task on all 5 of the bags and then move to the next step and complete that. I have never done that with any project, any sewing project. So this will be a new experience, and I'm really looking forward to immersing myself in that this afternoon.
Sweet nature thing. It's a modified nature play. It's a modified nature play. Leaves lay down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a sweet nature. It's a sui nature, a sui nature thing. It's a modified, a modified nature thing. It's a modified, a modified nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet. Song and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Bovine Social Club. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a modified nature thing. It's a modified nature thing. Two stoves out there stoving as a chipmunk on the lawn. Six turkeys up in munching like fat hogs. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a
thing.
It's a modified nature thing.